The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Mark Amtower of Amtower & Company, which is entirely responsible for its content.
This is Amtower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center, with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I am Mark Amtower. My guest today is somebody that I've known by rumor, innuendo, and social media. We've actually chatted a few times on the phone, but we've never met. Bob Gourley, welcome to the show, man.
Hello, Mark.
Good to have you here. So let's start off this way. Give us your background. I don't really care how far you go back because it's all related to the same issue where you sit now.
My deepest professional background, my roots are in naval intelligence. I was a operational naval intelligence officer for 20 years, focused on bringing information together, creating assessments, and being able to tell decision makers what's going on in a dynamic environment, so they can take action. And the last several years of my career as a Navy intelligence officer was done doing intelligence support to the emerging mission of computer network defense. So how do you defend, for our job, it was 3.6 million DoD computers, over 10,000 networks, and how do you defend against a dynamic adversary that's always trying to come at you? After retiring from the Navy, I worked at TRW at Northrop Grumman, and then went back into government as the Chief Technology Officer of Defense Intelligence Agency, where the mission was build a stronger, more interoperable enterprise that could better serve decision makers globally, including operational military decision makers wherever they are. And after that, I left and formed a consultancy where we do a lot of cybersecurity consulting. My consultancy was merged with two other consultancies a year and a half ago to form Cognitio, our current endeavor.
Okay, so in 07, you vacated government for private sector, and your first company was CTO Vision?
Well, the company was called Crucial Point. CTO
right.
Vision
okay.
remains. And CTO Vision is a blog providing context to enterprise technologists. So the CTO, the CIO, the CISO, the data scientist, and CTO Vision sends newsletters into those readers, a lot of federal readers and a lot of people in the financial sector and the IT industry are reader-based.
And me.
Awesome.
Well, I got to get the news feed somewhere, right? So.
Well, we appreciate you reading. We love every single reader, especially the new reader.
You want to share how many readers you have?
Well, we get about 7,000 hits a day just on the website.
Okay.
And then for the newsletter itself, we're just underneath 50,000. So we're nearing 50,000. Maybe after this broadcast, we'll push through that 50,000 barrier.
There you go. So tell people where they can sign up.
Well, you go to ctovision.com. And ctovision.com is the blog. And from there, there's a newsletter sign-up page. And we love all of our new readers.
Okay, so ctovision.com, and you know, the sign up for the newsletter and read the blog. I mean, I go to the blog probably three or four times a month. I get the newsletter when it comes out. I try to make time to read it, but I get a lot of stuff. So sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. A year and a half ago, you merged with two other companies, two other consultancies. Okay,
yes.
So Cognitio. What does Cognitio do, and who do you do it for/with?
Well, so first let me tell you about the four partners at Cognitio.
There you go.
We had been working together for so long, both when we were in government and out of government. So I'm one of the four partners. Another is Bob Flores. Now, he was the chief technology officer at CIA. He had a 30-year career in CIA and had his own consultancy that was focused on senior advisory work, helping CEOs advance their companies. And Bob and I worked extensively together in government and then out of government. We were doing a lot of teaming on due diligence assessments for the financial industry, for example. And then two other partners include David Hynote, who is a very savvy business consultant who's helped many companies in our ecosystem understand the market and devise strategies to win in the market. And then Roger Hockenberry, who was a partner at Gartner, where he had their IT portfolio and healthcare portfolio, and then served a lot of us in the intelligence community also. And he then got pulled into the intelligence community. He was the chief technology officer for the National Clandestine Service, supporting a lot of very important missions. So the four of us formed a partnership a year and a half ago and have been growing and serving ever since. The markets we serve include the government, where we do cybersecurity assessments, available on a government-wide acquisition contract, and also commercially. We serve multiple sectors of the economy doing cybersecurity assessments, going into a company and helping them understand how to improve their security posture.
Okay. You're available on a GWAC. I believe that's through our mutual friend, Mr. Carini.
That's correct. That's okay. Absolutely correct.
Yeah, Joe. So your stuff's available through CMA. It's at least available on the NITAC CIOCS vehicle, right?
Yes, that is our primary. That is our GWAC. Thanks to Joe and CMA, we're available through the CIOCS GWAC.
Cool. Good contract. A very good contract. Outside of the government, I'm assuming, I actually hope, that certain financial institutions tap into your expertise as well.
That's correct. We do work in throughout the finance sector. We've worked for some very large global banks who appreciate, you know, even though they can buy their own talent, they have some wonderful internal talent. But sometimes it's good to have external eyes come in and review everything with a fresh perspective and say, here's where we think your gaps are and how to address those gaps. And all of these banks share something in common. Whether you're very big or very small, you're all just being audited to death and assessed to death. And it's just so many requirements and regulations. They spend so much time just trying to be compliant. The savvy CISO and CIO and CEO understand you need to not just be compliant, you need to reduce your digital risk, and it's not the same thing.
Okay. So I mean, you've got a nice array of clients. So do you have some current – let me rephrase this another way. Obviously, you know what the top issues are facing the public sector and the private sector. Are they different or are they basically the same?
There are many similar issues. It's amazing the similarity in the issues. And the number one most important thing is both public and private sector face a dynamic adversary that continues to change and will keep attacking until they either get what they want or they get arrested. So that is a similarity across both public and private sector.
Can't we just shoot them?
You know, sometimes that's going to be, unfortunately, the only approach. And seriously, some of these bad guys are in parts of the world where there is no rule of law. They work in a kleptocracy where their government is going to protect them. So it's very tough.
Okay. So I'm not sure if I want to get started on those top issues just yet, so we're going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm here with Bob Gourley. Bob, is it Cognitio.com?
Yes, CognitioCorp.com.
Okay, but it's CognitioCorp.com.
Yes.
Check them out and check out the CTO Vision blog and sign up for the newsletter. We will be back after these messages. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. My guest today is Bob Gourley. The show is All Things Cyber. And Bob, last segment we were just starting to scratch the surface of top issues facing all communities here. So just rattle them off.
Well, so the key top one is all communities face a very dynamic adversary that will keep coming and keep coming and keep coming. Now, once we understand that, you need to build a defense, a good defensive architecture. And one thing that also, general advice that covers all sectors is, you need to, since the adversary will continue to attack, you need to design in a way that tries to prevent the breach, but understands that the breach will occur eventually. So designed with an understanding that when a breach occurs, you don't want the adversary to be able to get your most precious resources. You want to contain them. And so that is another tip that applies against all industries. Designed to prevent, but designed for containment when they do get in. And then designed to be able to respond to an incident, push the adversaries out. Now, from there, every industry segment is different. Every customer is different. And the advice gets much more technical and detailed and must be tailored because every industry is different. Healthcare, for example, they use a lot of Windows machines. Even their embedded IT might be running an old version of Windows on your X-ray machine, for example, or MRI machine. How do you protect in that environment? It's a very tough challenge that's different than from, say, manufacturing, where there's a lot of embedded SCADA systems and industrial control systems for a manufacturing plant.
Okay. I know on the healthcare, back in mid-February, you wrote a piece on your LinkedIn blog on Pulse regarding the ransomware issue. So what was the highlight there other than the fact that, you know, here's evil people doing evil in another way?
Well, so the very bad news there is that this ransomware is evolving, and it's evolving fast. At first, in the security community, it was almost a nuisance and a joke because it's just very simple, basic stuff, and a IT person or a security guy could just remove the ransomware. And so it was very immature. But it evolved and became stronger and stronger, and it's very tight encryption now where it does lock up your files, and you require the bad guys to unlock it, and they are demanding money. And even the FBI has said that in some cases it just makes sense to pay the ransom. So this is horrible, and it continues to evolve. It's becoming so complex that it will jump into your backup system and encrypt even your backups and require ransomware. Now, the issues that occurred in February, starting on February 5th, there was an attack against a hospital in Los Angeles, the Presbyterian Hospital of Los Angeles County, where it locked up incredibly important patient records and caused even the emergency room to have to curtail their operations until a ransom was paid. So this is a very serious threat. Let me tell you this. It's not a threat that you should take lightly. You can prevent the threat with good security measures.
Okay. Now, were those the measures that you outlined earlier, the defensive architecture designed to prevent the breach, the containment?
Okay. Absolutely. Those are the general frameworks that if you apply those, the ransomware does not get in. And if it does get in, it does not get to your most precious file. There's a lot of other technical details you need to follow, like selecting the right endpoint defense and selecting the right technologies to go on the boundaries of your network. And those technical details will vary, but the general approach of designing to prevent and designing for containment, protecting your data, is the same general approach.
Okay. So you mentioned, though, that in a number of instances, the systems in use are running dated, if you will, operating systems. How much more vulnerable are those? So if you're running XP or whatever, are they more vulnerable than 10 or Windows 7, or how's that work?
I think that is a great question that all of us should be asking ourselves. And for me, the answer always comes back to the older the operating system, the more vulnerable it is. Windows XP is now a 14-year-old operating system with so many vulnerabilities. Upgrades.
Even with all those patches?
Yeah, even with the patches. You know, the last major service pack came out 10 years ago. Now, since then, there's been a lot of patches, but you know, it's easier to discover new vulnerabilities. Upgrading to the more modern operating system, say Windows 10, gives you so many more security features, including an ability to encrypt everything in a very seamless way with a Microsoft BitLocker. Now, that's one example of upgrading. But remember what I said about the adversaries. We face these dynamic adversaries that are always going to keep coming, and they will find exploits and eventually get in. So even though you upgrade your operating system, you need to build this defense that understands that sometimes bad guys are going to get in.
Okay. Well, let me ask a different question. What operating system does Bob Gourley run?
You know, I am a Mac OS guy. Now, I use Windows 2, and sometimes I use Linux. But I use a tablet, an iPad. I use an iPhone, and I use a Mac laptop. And I run a Sophos antivirus, which I think is a very good addition to the Mac. And that's me in a nutshell. Now, but I also understand I've got vulnerabilities in my setup. So I take my own advice. And I don't try to get a breach. I try to prevent the breach, but I keep my data encrypted and backed up.
Okay, I'm very happy to hear you use Sophos. I hope it works well in the Microsoft environment too, because that's what I use.
Awesome, good.
So I heard a number of good things about it, so I decided to migrate away from the two other significant name brands that we'll leave unnamed right now, and migrate to Sophos. So there was you know, Norseman, I heard good things about. I mean, there's a number of tools out there that are quite good, right?
That's true. And there's a lot of tools, and if you are an individual, you know, you need to pick something that millions of people use, because that company is probably going to be around longer. If you are an enterprise, you need to think about a company that follows the advice I just gave. Design to prevent the breach, but if there's a breach, design for containment and collect data against it. So you want an endpoint defense that's going to use the segmentation and run your applications in a separate environment, like Inventia, for example. So those are the enterprise-grade solutions.
Okay. Is that your product, or?
No, Inventia is it's a product of Virginia, coming out of the minds of program managers who worked at DARPA and other highly secure research. Inventia is global now, however, and it's being used by enterprises to understand you have to protect the endpoint.
Okay, so I don't want to get too salesy here, but what's the you actually offer a service through CIOCS, not necessarily a product, right? It's an assessment.
That's correct. Well, we offer a service that can be bought like a product. So well-defined. It's a cybersecurity assessment. It's pre-competed, so anyone in government who wants to use this can look at the choices that we've offered there, and it is easily procure a cybersecurity assessment where we go in and in a brief period of time assess the cybersecurity posture and then give a roadmap on how to improve.
Oh, cool. Okay. Sounds good. We're going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'll be back with Bob Gourley after this message. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Bob Gourley. Our topic is all things cyber. Bob, another post that you did probably on CTO Vision, but also on your LinkedIn profile on Pulse, in the middle of October of last year, NIST issued the guidelines, the Guide to Cyber Threat Information Sharing, SP 800-150. You were extremely complimentary about this. So what are the big lessons from that? What kind of information were they sharing there?
Well, first about NIST, I think everybody in our ecosystem understands and respects the great role they play in coordinating across multiple organizations across the entire country to exchange best practices and lessons learned, and then bring people together to decide what kind of things need to be written down and promulgated as best practices and considerations. And on the right ones, which ones should raise to the level of standards. They've done such a great job for government. They've done a great job for industry. And now, recently, with the cybersecurity framework and the many related things associated with that, they've been just doing a tremendous job on the information exchange concepts and methodologies and best practices on things like how the government contractors should better secure their system, and of course, the cybersecurity framework itself. at first, like a lot of other computer guys, maybe I put my skeptical hat on a bit, and I, take pot shots. And I was maybe a little critical of them when they first started the cybersecurity framework. My thought, like a lot of others, was, why do we need another framework? We have so many. And every good CISO I know out there already has an approach that's working. Every bad CISO I know out there isn't going to listen to anybody anyway. But as soon as my eyes opened and I saw the benefit of this cybersecurity framework, which started with giving everybody a more common taxonomy for discussing your cybersecurity program in-house. And that common taxonomy can help large organizations communicate inside. It can also help you communicate with your suppliers and the people you sell to. And so it's putting large parts of the country on a more common taxonomy to discuss your cybersecurity posture.
Okay. Now, did they discuss the types of threats out there and how to deal with them in this report?
Maybe that is a slight weakness that I'm hoping in the next version they'll go a little bit deeper into. The threats are an area where there's still need for more examination and more awareness on what the bad guys are doing.
Well, one of the things that I hear about on a pretty regular basis is the threats not all being external, and part of that is people succumbing to phishing expeditions, et cetera. How much does that play into this?
A lot, because every way you categorize the threat, whether it's hackers, hacktivists, criminal organizations, nation states. All of those can also manifest themselves inside your own networks. If your own people turn on you, we use the term insider threat, it is the most insidious threat there. One day, a person is friendly, trusted, they're authorized access to all of your systems. Something happens overnight, and they become malicious. They have all the logons to your systems, they have badges to get into your building, and they can cause great damage. And trying to prevent the damage they can do, you have to be very careful because you can do damage yourself to your workforce morale and their belief in the mission of your organization. It's a tough challenge.
Okay. Another part of NIST I'm assuming you're familiar with is the Federal Information System Security Educators Association, FISEA. That's been around for, at least 30 years now. They're having a conference, I believe, in the next few weeks. And their job is that internal agency education, educating, people with any access to computers, what to do and what not to do. Have you ever attended or spoken at any of their events?
No, I haven't, unfortunately. I know they're doing very good work, and I hope to engage with them one day, but I just haven't to date.
Okay. Well, maybe I can do some intros there. I still know a couple of folks over there, even though most of the people I know are tending towards retirement right now. Not that I'm that old, from the NIST things, are there other sources? You indicated that there's just a ton of guidelines out there. Are you primarily employing the NIST guidelines when you're going into agencies or going into financial institutions, or I'm assuming you have your own guidelines and metrics that you overlay when you do this?
Well, so we take a look at business areas in ways that NIST does not. I mean, every business has a mission, and that is to serve their customers and grow their organization. And so we have a framework that lays on top of all that to help the line of business leaders understand the digital risk to whatever their operation is. And so that's the kind of thing not covered by the NIST framework. But beyond that, an organization may already have a framework. They may have several. If they're a global organization, they may have to comply with the frameworks and policies of other countries, for example, and for other standards in their industry. So, but wherever we go, we definitely keep the NIST framework in mind, and sometimes it's the appropriate way to help an organization get something in place. We also find that the requirements requirements for the financial industry map very well to the NIST framework. So there's definitely a lot of ways that you can map things into the NIST framework, even if you had a different approach to begin with.
Okay. I know you spent some time out in California recently. So I'm assuming that was primarily, if not exclusively, the RSA gig.
Yeah.
Okay. So for, I think anybody who knows anything about cyber knows that RSA is like, Comic-Con for the cyber world.
Yeah.
So, what, number one, what were you talking about there, and what were some of the highlights?
You know, first of all, there's a lot of continuity with previous years, and that a lot of the discussion was around the things I mentioned, that of course you need to mount a very good defense, but an adversary is going to keep coming at you, so you need to prepare for a dynamic defense, and when they get in, you need to design for containment and make sure that your data is encrypted. All those kind of things are standard and consistent. Over the last several years, there's been more talk about automating your response to a breach. So when malicious code gets in, it goes in an automated way. How can you automatically detect and then automatically stop that? And so that's been a consistent theme for several years. A couple of new themes emerged this year. A lot of people are talking about, okay, if the adversaries are in your networks and they're living there, they're trying to hide themselves, but you need to try to find them. And how do you hunt for them? So the word hunt, H-U-N-T, was a hot topic. So there are hunt teams, and there's companies that design software to help those hunt teams, and there's companies that field those hunt teams as a service. They'll come in and look for the bad guys for you. And so that, I imagine, will be a trend with us for several years.
Okay. What else? Any new products, upgrades that are going to break through the noise here?
Well, one very positive, optimistic trend is using cloud computing power to enhance security of enterprises. For example, there's a company called eSentire, which they have a security operations center. They also have a appliance that they will put in your infrastructure, and they will better manage your network for you. And when they see that you've got a virus or malicious code or a brute force hacker, their SOC will manage that, monitor it, and push that bad guy out for you. This is a major trend, and it's positive because a company like that can focus resources on getting the best people who really understand the threat and understand the data. So if you're a business, you're not going to be able to have that kind of people on your team unless you go to another company. I like this trend now of cloud computing and the power of cloud to enhance the security of enterprises.
Okay, because oddly enough, that was, you know, the hot topic when way back when Mr. Kundra introduced the idea of migrating to the cloud. The big issue was the security factor. So you're basically saying that that can, you know, be a better environment for security than what you're doing right now.
Yes, I absolutely believe that. Two ways. Number one is, if you're an enterprise and you're going to use cloud services, you pick a good vendor that has a good security background, whether it's IBM or Amazon or Google or Microsoft. You check their security status and you host your data there or host your services there. That's going to be generally more secure than you doing it yourself on premises. Number two, the security services themselves, like this company eSentire I mentioned, where they're doing the monitoring and incident response from a different location. So both of those aspects are good and virtuous trends.
Okay. Anything else hot out of RSA? I mean, you probably didn't get to go to all of it. I understand it was at least three total buildings, two convention centers and a hotel,
yeah,
something like that.
It was massive. And so 30,000 people, over 500 vendors. I told myself, okay, I'm a technologist. I want to go to every vendor there. It's impossible. And, you know, if you try to spend 1 hour with 500 vendors, you know, that's 500 hours. That's going to take you 10 weeks to do. And,
yeah,
you know, it's just impossible.
Either but that I, or 10 seconds a piece, and you put on your track shoes.
Yep. I loved trying, but it was tough.
Okay, so I'm not even going to ask how many you got through, but we are going to take a break. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. I'm with Bob Gourley. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. If you haven't guessed, Bob Gourley is my guest today. You can find Bob's blog at ctovision.com. You can find the company, him and his three partners, at cognitiocorp.com, C-O-G-N-I-T-I-O, corp.com. And we're going to delve into my favorite subject next, because I am not a technologist. I'm a marketing guy. Bob, you know, you left DIA in 07. LinkedIn had actually been around for 4 years at that point, Facebook for a year less, but you know, social networking really wasn't there yet. But you did something that I thought was pretty cool, and it got my attention very quickly, because I usually don't track CTOs vacating Intel community agencies. You started marketing, and you were really good at it. Your first thing out of the block was one of the more, if not one of the most instructive blogs on these security topics.
Well, Mark, thanks. First, let me say I left in late 2009 CIA, but who's counting? And the reason I started the blog in part was as a enterprise technologist, you need to understand, you have to continually self-educate. And I realized that if I force myself to write on a recurring basis, it's going to force myself to keep learning. So it was a way where I could continue to dive into these topics that I know are just so interesting for me, but I need the discipline to keep learning. And of course, from a marketing standpoint, it keeps my name out there and keeps a brand going and keeps introducing me to new people and allowing me to engage continually. So there's definitely a marketing piece to that. And so CTO Vision started with that in mind. That's going to be a way to force myself to write. It soon grew far beyond me, where we brought in other writers and teams of people to help generate meaningful content and to continue to improve awareness and understanding. I took the viewpoint that I want to provide advanced warning to technologists of disruptive technologies that are going to come and change their world. And it's a very fun mission to have. And to this day, underneath Cognitio now, we still want to help these CTOs and CIOs, CEOs and CISOs, and the data scientists understand the meaning of the coming future. So what's the future of cloud computing and artificial intelligence and mobility, robotics, big data, Internet of Things, and cybersecurity? That's what we want to capture.
Okay, but you know, I don't know where the blog ranked on the scheme of things, but I think it probably got a great core audience early on. Not long after, though, you then launched a newsletter. Was there a driving force there? Did that make you write about different things? Did it help you publicize the blog? Why the newsletter?
Well, so the newsletter was because a lot of people like consuming data in print in their newsletter instead of going to a web page each day. And so we want to be able to serve people where they are. And using new technologies at the time, MailChimp is a mailing list software that is very easy for users to sign up for. And if you want to change your email address, it's easy to use. If you want to unsubscribe, it's easy. So we're able to configure the blog to automatically push to that newsletter in a way that lets people get information the way they want. And then they can sign up by subject. They can say, I'm only interested in big data, or I'm only interested in cybersecurity, or I'm interested in the CTO Vision daily or the monthly. So it just became a natural extension. And now that is the way most people are consuming this. They get it in their email and they'll read it. Okay. We then launched another property called Threat Brief at threatbrief.com, and this one is designed to provide information on the strategic cyber threats to your business or your government organization. Every day at 8 in the morning Eastern Time, a newsletter goes out that you can read and in 5 minutes a day understand everything you need to know about the cyber threat.
Okay, is that new threats, reemerging threats? What?
It is any strategic threat. What are the bad guys doing right now that you need to know about? For example, this ransomware threat we discussed. We've been talking about that for months in the newsletter, giving advice on what's coming and how to prevent it.
Okay. Now, after your ransomware piece, did you by any chance pick up some healthcare chains? Have you worked in that arena? Because Lord knows they need your help.
Since you asked, I will tell you, we like to protect the privacy of all of our...
I'm not people. Asking for names.
I know. Okay. I just I just wanted to tell you, we love our readers and respect them, but we did get a very large number of sign-ups of organizations that made me want to reach out to them and say, you know, you should have signed up 3 weeks ago.
Well, there's that. All right, so let's fast forward a little bit. In 2010, GSA struck an agreement with the late 2010 struck agreements with the major social networks on how government employee data would be used by them. After that, it became okay for feds and probably much more state and local as well, but I don't deal with that. So a lot of feds started joining. We're now up to about 1.6 million feds on LinkedIn, but you were there early on as well. So how did you start leveraging that to incorporate that into your message sharing?
Well, so in every element of social media, I always start with why am I here? What's my purpose? What's the objective? And in most cases, for example, on Twitter, my objective is I want to learn from other people. So I want to follow the thinkers in technology so I can see what they're reading. And of course, I want to disseminate my blog and want to grow a readership there. And then in LinkedIn, it's slightly different. Of course, I do want to share stuff from the blog, but I want to engage with professionals that I may want to do business with. I want them to know what my services are, so they'll know how to reach me easily. And for Facebook, it's slightly different also. Some people are there because I'm friends and I've known them forever, and so they're connected to me on Facebook. Others are business professionals, and so I use that to provide information on the blog, but also communicate with friends. So in each case, it's slightly different.
Well, this, one of the reasons that, we've talked back and forth about you being on the show for at least a year. But one of the reasons that really pushed me over the edge this time was a newsletter or a blog post or both about a month ago talked about the feds being able to access your services through a pre-competed GWAC. And I'm thinking, if more companies did this, if they said, our services are available on CIOCS or, you name the GWAC, how much more business could they attract as a result? And I believe you mentioned CMA in the same piece. So, again, your marketing instincts for, and this is not a slam, most techies don't have strong marketing instincts. You've been dead on with each move.
Well, I tell you, I have been, maybe part of it's lucky. Part of it is also because I have these great partners, who one of which, David Highnote, has extensive marketing abilities and skills. But we just take the standpoint that we want to get the right information to the right people. And I think that pays off when you allow people to get the information they need and want to make a business decision. We really want to help government organizations increase their security posture. And we now have a way that they can do that, and it's very inexpensive and fast, so they'll see a great return on investment.
Okay. But, even before you were partnered with David, your instincts have been quite good.
Thanks for saying that, Mark. I appreciate it.
Well, you could be a case study in my next book. serious biz. So maybe we'll talk about that too, because Government Marketing Best Practices 2020 is going to come out sometime this year. Any final thoughts here?
I think the coming Internet of Things is something that is creeping up on us a little bit like, how do you boil a frog? It's like the temperature's raising and raising. We've been talking about the Internet of Things for 5 years, and so we're becoming numb to the concept. So let me just leave you with this fact. In 2017, next year, the number of Internet Things devices are going to surpass all computers, all cell phones, all tablets in just 1 year. And after that transition point, it will never go back again. The new approach is Internet of Things. Everything's got a chip and everything's talking to everything else.
Good Lord. Bob, thanks so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Mark.
And we'll get together for coffee soon, honest.
Let's do it.
There you go. You've been listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. This is not my day job. I advise people and companies on various aspects of marketing to the government. We do a lot of work on helping companies leverage social media, particularly LinkedIn. Look me up on LinkedIn or find me at federaldirect.net. And thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off-Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off-Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.